This is KPFK Access Unlimited. I'm Matthew Worley here in studio with Tamara Johnson, Jolie Mason, and Ilana Weinstein. And joining us in studio today is our guest, David Pinto. David has worked in TV, theater, and film as a pianist, conductor, or arranger for The Fifth Dimension, Ann Margaret, Tracy Ullman, The Smothers Brothers, Captain and Tennille, The Osmonds, Tony Orlando and Dawn, Lola Falana, Mac Davis, Joey Heatherton, Sandy Duncan, Steve Allen, Sally Struthers, Florence Henderson, The Love Boat, Cab Calloway, Nicholas Brothers, Ann Miller, and Ian Whitcomb. In addition, David is an award-winning computer programmer specializing in making music applications accessible to blind musicians. Hundreds of blind musicians around the world have used his software, and he has personally taught Diane Shure, Marcus Roberts, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, and Kevin Kern. David's wife, Gail, is a certified teacher of the blind in the public schools. And in 2003, Gail and David founded the nonprofit Academy of Music for the Blind, the only school of its kind that offers a comprehensive music education to musically talented blind youth. For his work with blind musicians, David has been featured twice on CBS 60 Minutes. And he joins us now in studio. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here.
My goodness, that is this is just a dream come true to have David Pinto on Access Unlimited. Now, let me start out a little bit with some background. You didn't start out with music accessibility and those kinds of things. Talk to us a little bit about your original interest in music and then how that became a passion to make music accessible for people with disabilities.
Well, I played music piano from a very early age, and classical music. That's what I loved the most. Very early, I started playing with concerts and with symphony orchestra, and that's how I made my living through music. And in the 90s, I started teaching at college, Pierce College in Woodland Hills. How to record music with computers. So that was new. As you know, we used tape before, and now it's digital recording. So I started teaching digital recording at Pierce College to sighted musicians. And then accidentally a blind student walked in to my class, and the rest is history, which I can recount.
That
now,
sounds a little bit like
later.
A blind joke.
Yeah.
A blind musician walked into it.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Tamara?
So, David, wow, your bio is so impressive. What inspired you and Gail to establish the Academy of Music for the Blind? And what were some of the challenges, and still today, what are some of the challenges that you experience?
Well, the blind musician who walked into my recording, digital recording class, I took him out because he was disturbing everybody. He was playing on the piano. He thought we were a rehearsal hall. And everybody, 20 sighted students were on earphones making music, right? Mm-hmm. And so I took him to a rehearsal hall, and then after our class, I brought him back and put him in a computer and tried to see if he could do what we were doing, and he couldn't. And I got very, very interested in that. And then I learned how to code for the JAWS screen reader, which is a talking voice that speaks the location of the focus in Windows computers of where the focus is. So a blind person would always know where they are, and then they can type or they can navigate.
Oh,
that's the JAWS screen reader. And it had just come out a year or two before I started working with the blind. So I learned how to code for it, and pretty soon I got really, really interested in making music applications accessible to the blind. And I started to give workshops for professional musicians. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that came to the workshops were not professional musicians, like one Jolie Mason. She was in one of the workshops. And So I had several workshops like that. Pierce College allowed me to do that. And we did things that were music related. And one of them was that I found a sonar instrument that beamed sonar beams and could tell where you were moving and how you were moving. And it was connected to a MIDI instrument, an electronic keyboard. And I programmed it so that when you move closer, mm-hmm. it would make a particular scale. And if you move fast or smooth or whatever, it would make another sound. And Jolie got in front of that sonar.
I remember this.
And after about 1 minute, she was doing a hula dance.
It was an absolute treat. I don't know if I would call it hula, but it was definitely dancing. It was definitely
was so beautiful to see you dance.
It was just absolutely wonderful.
Because however you moved made music of difference.
You know, for people who have ever had problems like singing to a beat or something like that, suddenly when you are the music, it is just miraculous.
It was like an eye opener, and it gave me a lot of ideas of that I applied
that to this day. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll never forget
But tell us about you and Gail starting the school.
Yeah, so this is the reason why I mentioned that is just the transition. So I started making music software that software for mainstream recording applications accessible to the blind. And I really worked on it really strong. I was like a maniac for 12 years doing it. And there was two things that I did. One made recording software accessible and then notation software accessible. Mm-hmm. So as a blind person could take a piece of music, a blind person could create music for sighted people to play. So that's when Ray Charles called me. Uh-huh. And he said, I hear you do this and do that. So I was with him for a year and a half. And also, Jolie, when you heard that I was with Ray, you said, oh, can he come on the show? So I came on the show, and I was sitting here wanting to talk, about the Academy of Music for the Blind. And we had named it the Ray Charles Academy of Music for the Blind at that time because Ray jumped aboard. And so I was, And then he phoned in, and you had a nice interview with him. So Ray, I did that, and I taught Stevie Wonder some recording software. But to get around to the Academy of Music for the Blind, so in 1996 I met the blind musician Eddie Salcido, who is now one of our teachers. So he was my student, now he's one of our teachers. And so I was teaching adults, and then around 1998 I met a little girl, 5 years old, Rachel Flowers, and she was amazing musician and blind. And I had her try my software, and she was creating symphonies out of it. It was just so amazing to see. And I thought, wait a minute, I love children. This kid's blind. She has perfect pitch. There's other kids like that. I think that's what, and then I told Eddie, guess what? I'm going to do an Academy of Music just for the blind. And so that's when that happened, and the idea happened. And so I started out that way. And then my future wife, Gail, I told her about it and that I was going to do that. And she said, I'd like to join you. So we incorporated in 2003. And we had three students, Rex Lewis Clack, a blind prodigy, Rachel Flowers, and Connor Head, who's now had another name. I forget what it is, Coco Atma or something like that. He's a blind skate. Our border. So we started in 2003 in our house. We were working for 9 years. Then we got too big for our house, so then we moved to TLC, Therapeutic Learning Centers for the Blind.
Right.
Yeah. And we taught out of there. Then too big for there. Then we went to another place, and now we're finally in Whittier at the Calvary Baptist Church. They have a whole wing that used to be a high school, no longer there, so we occupy that. But to finish the story, what got me fascinated with working with the blind is that they use their ears. They're not dependent so much on notes. So their approach to music is more holistic, and a higher percentage have a perfect pitch. And I'm primarily interested in the little flowers that I can water and that I can develop. Not the anybody over, you know, the developmental stage is what I'm interested in. So the Academy's devoted for youth between 4 years old and 18. And we don't accept anybody after the age of 15. And I love the children. And so I love that they use all of their senses and their hearings. It's so inspiring.
Wow. So you started with three, and about how many students approximately do you have?
About 25 now.
Nice.
And there is actually in Los Angeles, there's probably another 20 that match what we, in order to get in the academy, you have to be blind. You have to have an aptitude for music. You have to be able to learn at least at a normal rate, and not be a danger to anybody else. And all those criteria slowly developed over the years so that we could serve as best we could kids with high aptitude like that. There's probably about 30 or 40 in Los Angeles that we're not serving because they don't know about the academy. And now we went national. We went on Zoom also. So now we're serving a half dozen kids from around the nation. And there's probably 300 or 400 other children around the United States that we want to serve. So we're in a two-year plan to be able to expand our academy to serve several hundred.
Well, that's absolutely
fantastic.
Incredible. You know, you had mentioned teaching Braille music.
Yes.
And, you know, I can talk a little bit about what Braille is like, and certainly we do Braille Day on January 4th and good stuff like that. But talk to us a little bit about, because I bet most people don't know that there is such a thing as Braille music. So how do you translate the different notes into the Braille patterns?
Well, there's software. Software is developed to actually translate music into Braille music, which is similar to literary, but it's a little bit different because it's based on solfège, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Mm-hmm. So when an A, B, C, D, E, F, G of the piano don't translate to A, B, C, D, E, F, G of Braille. So you have to kind of learn it. It's like learning math, Nemeth, or
Nemeth
Braille. Yeah. And then so you learn how to do it, and there's software that can translate it, but the most reliable is to have a Braille music transcriber, a human being, actually do it. They take a look at the notation. Excuse me. Volume of Beethoven sonatas. Open it up. Sighted person plays it. Ba, 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 ba. Blind person can't sight read like that. So we have to translate those notes, and they translate it to Braille, embossed Braille page, or into BRF files, which are electronics for a refreshable Braille display. You can read the music.
And I think that's important to mention to people, because they often think that there's some kind of one-to-one correspondence between a text letter and then what the Braille is going to be for that as well. But Braille isn't actually like that. And certainly Braille music has, again, a different kind of patterning of how you're going to get not only the time signature, but you're also going to get the length of time a particular note is going to be held, and, of course, which particular note it's going to be. So, again, all of the Braille is the same old Braille dots, but now it means a whole lot of different things.
Right.
Tamara?
Yeah. So, David, you talked about going national, which is great, and maybe that there's possibly 300 more students out there that you, could possibly access. Talk about some of the classes that you offer and what the students can expect to learn.
Yeah. They learn everything in music. So it's an all-day Saturday program that can be supplemented by private lessons during the week. There, all the lessons except for chorus and band, those group things, are one-on-one, one teacher and one student. And so each student, for instance, they come on Saturdays and they leave at 2:30, come at 9 o'clock, leave at 2:30, have a lunch break. And so here's a typical one. 9 o'clock, I have a piano lesson. 9:45, I have a ukulele or a guitar lesson. 10:30, I have a vocal lesson. 11:15, I have a flute lesson. 12 o'clock, I have a braille music lesson. 1:30, I have a dance lesson. Mm-hmm. And then at 1:45, I have a technology lesson, either learning how to type, with software that I've developed called Typeability.
Oh, wow.
That teaches the blind how to type. And it's, by the way, distributed all over the United States in the public schools for the blind students. So that's a typical day. and that's pretty great. You know,
yeah.
That's every
it's
Saturday.
Comprehensive.
Yeah, it's comprehensive. That's the word. And not all of the students are going to excel at any particular instrument. Some of them do.
But they get to try them, and that's what it's about. That's awesome.
So tell us a little bit about these teachers. How do you ensure that the teachers are trained, and where do they come from? And then, again, if you could tell us a little bit about that whole procedure.
All the teachers that I hire, almost all, are working musicians. They're not just teachers. They have to be working musicians. Mm-hmm. And they have to know pop and jazz music, not just classical. And so I hire them usually from universities that give them an all-round education. And one of the colleges that does that, that more than 50% of our teachers are from the Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Wow.
Because that's really a well-rounded education. Mm-hmm. What's happened is that most conventional music teachers are just readers. They just read. But we don't – they can't transpose things that they've learned into another key. They can't improvise. But they're wonderful technically. They're wonderful – you know, they just read. And it's cut short their development. And so what I hire is people who can read but also can play by ear. Mm-hmm. That's really, really important. Braille music is not done in the beginning. We don't learn through Braille music in the beginning. They learn Braille music, but that's not the way they learn. They learn by listening. And so they develop a wonderful ear. And then when they get to be 12, 13, 14, they can start to read also. I had a very interesting experience with a blind person who's a wonderful musician, and they learned just by Braille music.
Oh.
And now they can't play by ear. They can't, and they're totally bowled over by all of our amazing students who can do both. Mm-hmm. So that's a little idea of our academy, and it's both in person in Los Angeles and also on Zoom for the non and Los Angelinos.
The non Los Angelinos. So you also offer an internship as well. Tell us about that and how that works.
Say that again.
You also offer an internship. Do you offer internships?
Oh, yeah. So there's two things. Mm-hmm. One is I teach teachers how to teach the music teachers how to teach the blind. And once they get a certificate, they can go into a particular registry of music teachers for the blind. And that's that is maintained by the Children's Eye Foundation. Oh. And so I teach them all the things to do, the things not to do. And I just started that about 2 years ago. And maybe 20 people have studied with me, and half have not been able to get a certificate. Why? Because they're so unable to get out of the mindset of reading music and rather than listening to music and transferring things in an organic way. But 10 are wonderful. Now they're in that registry. The registry holds about 100 teachers of the blind. That's the Children's Eye Foundation. It's called Vision Through Music, if you ever want to look that up. Mm-hmm. And you can find teachers.
Is that a website for them?
Yeah. Vision Through Music. Now, the other thing is the internship for the kids. One of the things we're really proud of is that the fact that music is really a portal to other educational subjects, like mathematics,
right,
can be understood through rhythm. And so if kids love rhythm, we can teach them fractions because mm-hmm. it's based on fractions, which is a little bit difficult to understand. English, they lyric write. And also just communicating, Jolie.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? These
right.
kids are in front of hundreds of people during a concert, communicating clearly. They've been, they have great confidence. And we've helped them maintain their body posture in ways that are visually pleasing and also healthy for them.
Yeah.
And so what we're proud of is preparing the children for a greater life outside of this, you know, mm-hmm. and for higher educational institutions or the workplace. And then as far as our internship program, when they turn 13, 14, or 15, depending upon their aptitude for it, we start having them teach the other children. Mm-hmm. And they love that. And children love to be taught by an older child, you know. And so we'll do, let's say, I'll do a piano lesson or a ukulele teacher or a guitar teacher. We'll do, and we'll start working on it and doing something. And we'll say, okay, you take it over. And they'll take it over for 5-10 minutes. Or it could be a typing lesson or a computer lesson. And then at lunchtime, the child is given an opportunity to serve others.
Oh, you know, that's so important,
yeah.
That autonomy. I just, that is so important to do that, to have people recognize their own agency and make a difference in that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the parents also. You do some training in how parents can advocate for themselves and for their children in the public school system. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, when the parents come in the beginning, like a young child, 4 years old, usually they're quite upset. They just don't know what to do. And they feel so isolated. Now they come to the academy and they're with, you know, 20 other parents who have been through the same thing. And all of a sudden, the clouds part. And it goes from having the burden of a blind person to the blessing. And it's just marvelous to see.
Yeah.
The challenges remain in the public schools, although we're so much better off because of legislation saying that things have to be accessible for the blind. But you still have to advocate. And they have something called an IEP, which is an instructional improvement program,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And those are regular things where the teachers get together with the parents and the counselors and the VI teacher also get together, and they map out, you know, what are we going to do? What can we? What hardware do we need to buy for them? What software? Where are the failings? Where are the strengths that we're doing? And so we cooperate with those IEPs. Either from a distance or by actually going there. Also with the parents themselves, they're together at the academy. Half of them just stay at the academy. And so every Saturday, they're sharing information.
Right.
We don't even have to have a workshop on how to do anything. We do, but there's so much information exchanged between them.
Right.
And so that's a great opportunity for the parents to sit down, have lunch together, throughout the whole day. They're talking. What's your
Share
research?
Experiences what they found out. And,
yeah. What right. is your experience? How do you get that Braille material early? It's always too late. Okay, this is how we did it.
Oh, it's a community. I
right.
love that.
It is. It's a community. Everybody calls it a family.
And speaking of the IEPs, what steps do you think the schools should take to make it more accessible to blind students? I mean, I'm sure that's a big question.
That's a whole.
If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share.
I have a difficulty with public schools. So
maybe we could focus it on how the academy might prepare how you prepare your students, possibly.
Well, if the kid's having a problem, it's fun for me. Mm-hmm. If they're having a problem with, say, math or reading Braille, mm-hmm. We'll give them a class. In math, we'll give them a class, and we'll just, it's like we're remedial, you know. We'll help them with that.
Wow.
Yeah. And, like, for instance, we just got a new kid. He's 6 years old, and he's learning Braille, but he was reluctant about it. So we got a bunch of kids' jokes. And we told him, you know, he'd sit down at the Perkins Brailler, right? That typewriter thing that brails out things. Sits down, and then we say, okay, what wobbles when it flies? So now he has to write, what wobbles when it flies? And then the answer is a jellycopter. And then he goes, jellycopter. And then we say, okay, now you're going to have somebody else read that. During share time. At the end of the day, after lunch in the last class, everybody shares what they want to do, what they have been learning, music. And so that's huge incentive. He's learning, he's typing a joke, brailing a joke, and it's going to be read by somebody else, so it better be accurate.
Right, so that's the incentive and the motivation.
And if it's
that's
not
great.
Accurate, the kid, well, I can't read this. Well, next week. He's going to be more accurate.
Uh-huh.
And then laughter at the end of the joke,
right.
Courtesy of this young boy. So, you know, we find creative ways.
Wow.
That's the thing that I love
creative.
Doing in education, mm-hmm. is creative ways to impart things rather than put stamps, stamp it into somebody's head. Let it be an organic exchange. And that's the problem I have with the public schools.
Yeah. You know, if you're like me and you would like to meet this man, because he is just, these stories are fantastic.
Absolutely.
And you can tell there's a lot more. You know, there's a fundraiser coming up for this wonderful organization called the Academy of Music for the Blind.
Because I know this stuff costs.
If you would just spend a little bit of time and tell us about that upcoming fundraiser.
Please.
And invite our audience here and tell them how they can... They can make a difference and how they can help.
Great, yeah. We're having a concert. We have two concerts every year for the public in the spring and in the autumn. And this is going to be November 16th, Saturday, November 16th, between 2 and 3:30. We're going to have a concert of the children. And it's going to be wonderful music. It's really entertaining. And there's also going to be some videos of the kids from around the nation.
Wow.
So it's going to be a mixture.
All students,
yeah.
Primarily. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All students.
Fantastic.
It's all the students, but they're amazing.
Wow.
Six of them are in an a cappella group, and they just we just got back from Chicago 4 days ago, where we were hired to sing at an event in Chicago, and they were paid professional fees. It was really, really wonderful. You'll be able to hear them. They're called a cappella.
Acapella.
Not acapella. Acapella.
Spell that. I'm going to write that acapella.
And then the concert will be November 16th, and it'll be in Whittier at Calvary Baptist Church.
Okay.
And we have room for about 300 people, so hopefully we're going to pack it.
Oh, my goodness, it's coming right up. So how do they find out more about it?
Are there tickets and what's
yeah,
the cost?
Yeah, they can find out more about it by going on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Our, A-M-B. Our is the pronoun, like O-U-R.
Mm-hmm.
And A-M-B is the acronym for Academy Music Blind. So O-U-R-A-M-B.org, because we are a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And you can go there and you can take a look at the events. And you'll see that we'll see more information about that. The Calvary Baptist Church is in Whittier on Newland Avenue, 6548 Newland Avenue. And it's also going to be live streamed. And we're developing a flyer now that's going to be distributed and available that gives more information.
Okay,
about
great.
It.
And again, make sure you send that to us too.
Mm-hmm. And if send that to us. And if you missed any of that, would you send me an email, and I'll email you the contact information that David just said. I know it's hard sometimes. You're in the car or something like that, and you can't take something down.
Right.
So email us. I'm Jolie Mason, J-O-L-I-E Mason, M-A-S-O-N, and it's at laradioreading@gmail.com. All one word, laradioreading@gmail.com. And I'll get the information to you.
Yes, absolutely.
And coming right up, too.
Yeah. And so, David, if they can't make the concert, you said it's going to be live streamed.
Right.
So they can still donate. Will there be a way they can donate if they want to?
Absolutely.
Online?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
There's a donation page on the website, and there's a QR code that we're going to be distributing electronically and through paper that will lead you to the donation page. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's really delightful to talk to you two ladies. You had good questions.
Well, I mean, and we still have a few more minutes left, and I'm just really amazed
to the
because
computer stuff. That's the stuff I want to talk
about.
Oh, yeah,
about. We're going to talk. I just want to say one little thing. It's just amazing you open up a whole new world to these students, and it's just, I mean, I'm just moved just hearing you giving some of the examples of the students, and you know, these are all success stories. So I was going to ask you to share some success stories, but as I listen to you speak throughout the interview, I'm just thinking, wow.
We've had some wonderful students come through the academy. Rex Lewis Clark, Rachel Flowers, then that blind skateboarder that I told you about. His name now is Coco Atma or something like that, but it's Connor.
Oh, the skateboarder.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wonderful communicator too, mm-hmm. and he developed. I introduced him to Ray Charles, both him and Rachel, and they were both like 7 or 8 years old.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool.
Oh yeah, and then Rachel plays for Ray, and Ray goes, "Oh, Rachel, how do you play like that?" And to Connor opens like this. Ray, I have your picture up in my bedroom. You know, my favorite one is. Then he starts talking about his favorite song, and Ray starts going, "Oh, that's lovely, my son."
Aww.
It was so touching to see.
I like that. You know, we do a history segment, and I was thinking during that segment, you are the guy.
Yes.
I want to hear a little bit about
the
development of this, the music mm-hmm. software and that kind of thing. Talk to us a little bit about Bill McCann. Tell us a little mm-hmm. bit about Dancing Dots. Tell us a little bit about your contributions to all of that. You should have made this list. Next time, don't worry, you'll be there.
Well, thank you. I became obsessed with making things, music is accessible to the blind. So the first thing I did was made a program called Cakewalk, a music recording software, accessible. And but it required you to use the PC keyboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the children that I were teaching were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, and they didn't know how to do that.
Yet,
they didn't know how to do that. I spent 2 years at the Southern California Conservatory of Music between 1998 and 2000, or 1999 and 2001, that had a Braille music division. That's where I first met some of these blind children. Anyway, so all you had to do is press Control R and this and this happens, or just press F and or W and rewind and R, we record. Well, the kids, they didn't, you know, I showed them where it was, but they would be pressing the Windows key and then or and then the letter R. Pretty soon they were in the Windows registry erasing the entire, you know.
Well, and it's because those are based on the words, and the words are, you know, they don't know that R is record because they haven't learned the word record yet and that kind of stuff, yeah.
So I thought, okay, I got to create a piece of software that will teach them how to type. So the first thing I did, you know, like, the F and J, hello, and you press F, and then it would say, hello, I'm Mr. F, so happy that you visited me. And then they press J, hello, my name is Jack, for J, and they loved that. Uh-huh. So they learned how to type with the software, and everybody loved it, and it was amazing to see, because we had some kids with ADHD, and we're on an autism spectrum. We, for 10 kids, we had to have 6 teachers controlling them. Once we got that software, they would sit at for 45 minutes just playing with it, and I just needed one teacher for the entire class. They learned how to do it, and I called it Typeability, the name of the software, and then I perfected it more and more, and it became a full typing program, and somebody said, why don't you distribute this? So I started doing that, and then the final little piece of the software thing was that after I had developed software to make audio recording accessible, Kevin Kern, a blind pianist, New Age pianist, told me about software called Sibelius. And what Sibelius did was make music notation possible for a blind person to create music notation for sighted people to play. Ray Charles used to dictate every one of his notes. C, first sax, second beat, third sax, A, trombone, like that, throughout the whole thing. That's the way he put it together, and he found out that I had made this music software accessible, and he said, Dave, teach me how to do it. Within 6 months, he learned how to do it, and then I said, there's a CSUN Accessibility Disability Conference at the Marriott Hotel. And this was 2003. Would you come and display and write something out? I'll hire a jazz band. And then when you're done writing it out, just hit Control-P. It'll send it to the printer. I'll put it in front of the guys, and you count it off immediately, and let's see what's happening. He said, I'd love to do that. So Stevie Wonder was in the audience. Diane Schur was in the audience. A bunch of blind, wonderful people. It was at the CSUN conference. Mm-hmm. And that was history. In 45 minutes, he started, and in about 40 minutes, he hits Control-P. There's the music. I put it on the stands of 8 musicians that I had hired, but I turn it around so they can't see it. And I said, you can only turn it around when Ray starts counting 1, 2, 3, 4. So Ray goes, 1, 2. They turn it around and they play it perfectly.
Wow.
And so that was like an interface of the blind musician with the sighted. That's just amazing.
Wow, that is an incredible story.
People, absolutely.
If you would like to meet this gentleman and hear some more of these wonderful stories, you can actually go to an event that they are going to be hosting. Let's get some quick contact information. We're going to be leaving in just a minute. But if you would give us the information again about your event.
It's going to be Saturday, November 16th. It's our fall concert. It's a fundraiser, too. It's between 2 and 3:30. At Calvary Baptist Church in Whittier. It's 6548 Newland Avenue. And it's also going to be live streamed. And soon we'll have the link for the live stream available. And we'll get that to you, all that information to you also, Jolie.
All right.
Right. Please do, so we can repeat it.
And the web page, your web page.
Yeah, the web page is OURAMB.org, and we also have all the socials. Our social media manager, Anthony Valadez, has done a fabulous job with posting just wonderful reels on Instagram and YouTube, and now TikTok.
TikTok,
there we go.
Fantastic.
Well, TikTok means it's time for us to go, people.
Yes.
I want to thank everybody who has helped put this particular episode of Access Unlimited together.
Yes, wonderful.
And again,
interview.
Thank you so much, David, for coming in as an in-studio guest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for what you do. This is fascinating.
Will you come to the concert if you can?
I would love to.
I would love to see you there.
I would love
Good.
To.
Good. Now, I'm going to introduce you to the kids, too. It'll be an event.
And I would like to thank Matthew Worley for the wonderful job with some pretty technical engineering here. And thank you to Alana Weinstein, our intern,
yes.
who is in the master control, doing all those wonderful things with the gain and good stuff like that. I want to thank everybody who helped with this particular episode, particularly Abe Shapiro, another one of our interns. Thank you, everybody. I want to thank you particularly for listening to Access Unlimited mm-hmm. every Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Join us here on Access Unlimited.
Janessa Goldbeck, Marine Corps veteran and the CEO of Vet Voice Foundation.
One in five of the people who were charged in the insurrection were actually military veterans. That is vastly disproportionate to our share of American society.
Award-winning filmmakers Tony Gerber and Jesse Moss.
There's got to be certain issues that we can all agree on, like the peaceful transfer of power.
Well, I think we see it in the war game. We see a healthy politics model, people who probably disagree on a lot of things politically, but actually agree on guarding our democracy.
On today's show, we're speaking with the team behind War Game, the new film that questions how prepared we are for another post-election insurrection. Janessa Goldbeck produced the War Game that is at the center of the film, directed by Gerber and Moss. This week on Laura Flanders and Friends...
That's Laura Flanders and Friends this Friday at 6:30 a.m. right here on KPFK.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman of the Bradcast, heard right here on KPFK, Mondays at 3 p.m. As you know, KPFK is corporate-free, listener-supported radio. But that means we need you to support our work and help drastically shorten our fund drives by joining the KPFK Sustainers Circle today. You can pledge $5, $10, $20, or any amount you like, automatically collected each month to help keep the Bradcast and all of the other KPFK shows on the air. Please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voices on your public airwaves. That's kpfk.org. Please sign up now, and thanks.
Hi, this is Robbie Krieger from The Doors, and you are listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7 FM.